Are council signed in yet?
Yes.
All right. Then we're ready to proceed when you are. Yeah, Hampton. Hampton versus the Commonwealth.
Okay, please support Maude Hartrick for the Office of Public Defender in Danville. I represent the appellant Dominic Hampton in this matter. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes on the vote.
3 minutes, yes, ma'am.
We have three issues before the court this morning. The first being the fact that there was insufficient evidence to prove that the gun that Mr. Hampton used for statute 18.308.2 was made, designed, and intended to expel projectile by means of explosion.
Why isn't Red determined the outcome of that? It seems to me this case is analytically almost identical to the facts of Red. And
I anticipated that from you, Judge Humphreys. read your opinion.
I'm familiar with that one.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I actually think the reason it's completely different is that, and the trial court makes this determination in motion to strike, and again at the close of the evidence, that there was a threat to kill. There was never a threat to kill. The victim was very explicit in, he threatened to shoot me. But we know that there are many different types of weapons that are able to be shot. BB guns, we have pneumatic.
I'm going to shoot you is not a threat to kill.
You can shoot somebody with a paintball gun, you're not going to kill them. Hopefully. Right? I mean, so there's a definite distinction here.
Well, it seems to me, given the fact that Red is out there, what you've got to distinguish, it seems to me, is, you know, the your client here says, I'm going to shoot you. He points what a witness describes as a large black gun that looked like a military rifle.
Right.
So that's evidence in the light most favorable of the Commonwealth, and what the Commonwealth has to prove is that it's a gun. And so, you know, what Red says is, you know, you don't always have these things to send to the lab to analyze, and if someone is representing it to be a gun, that's evidence from which you conclude that it actually is a gun, or someone is acting in a way that suggests that it is, that it's not a toy gun or something of that nature. So, you know, when you say, I'm going to shoot you, and then you also have a witness who says, that's a gun, now, obviously, that can be tested on cross-examination. They may or may not be factually correct, but the evidence in light most favorable of the Commonwealth is it's a gun that a witness said, I'm going to shoot you with. So why, again, I mean, I don't understand the distinction between what we had in Red and what we have here.
Well, I think the implied assertion is from the threat to kill is that that's a functioning weapon with the power to kill. The difference is that we have a weapon now that has the power to shoot, which, like I said, we've got airsoft guns, we have paintball guns, we have BB guns, which we assert was the gun in this case, that's not going to kill somebody. In terms of the second point, which is that we have this co-defendant who's receiving consideration for his testimony at trial to say that, yeah, it was a black gun, I saw it. You know, I mean, it wasn't helpful. We also had an introduction of a photograph.
Well, you assert that's not helpful. We, you know, the fact finder apparently found it to be helpful.
Well, and I think the fact finder actually included in the transcript that he takes the testimony of Mr. Trotter with great caution because he knows that there are certain implications for what his testimony was going to mean for his bid with the Commonwealth. But I would state that, I lost myself there. I think that what we have here is a victim who is unfamiliar with guns. She says that I saw a long black gun, very similar to Red, which this court has held. That wasn't going to be enough. She found a photo online, which the Commonwealth really didn't lay a very significant foundation for. It was, and did you find something that sort of looked like the thing that was used that day? And she said yes, and they introduced this photograph of something being held up like this. You can't see the tip on it. She says that's what it looked like. We then have an officer say, that looks like an M4 or an M16. But the same officer can see that he never saw the gun. There was never a gun specifically identified to him as being the gun that was used. And he says that if an orange tip is removed or you can't see the orange tip, a BB gun can look exactly like an actual firearm. And I think that we need to hold the Commonwealth to their burden to prove that this was a firearm that had the means of explosion, and I don't think that they did. I don't think that we give the Commonwealth a pass on proving that when we say that a threat to shoot is enough. I don't think that it is. I think that Justice Powell in the Jordan dissent and from the Supreme Court wrote that there is an important distinction between 18.2, 308.2, and the use of a firearm in the commission of a felony. And that is that an appearance of the object alone is appropriate and sufficient only for a conviction for the use of a firearm commission of a felony. If this case was to be affirmed, we are eradicating that distinction. There was no specific identification of that weapon, there was no examination of that weapon, there was no test fire, and there certainly wasn't a threat to kill. Ultimately, the Commonwealth witnesses can only say generally what the gun looked like, and that those facts leave open the possibility that this gun...
So unless you recover the gun, you can never get a conviction, it sounds like.
No, I think there are... Let's take the Jordan case, for instance. That 13-year-old boy had some familiarity with the gun. He was able to specifically identify it was a Raven. It looked like a Raven. There was something more there. And I understand that we're not going to hold victims to knowing, you know, what's being used on them every time. But we still think that the testimony of the defendant, in which he said this was a gun, he was very specific where he got it, how he put it in the car. He wrapped it up in a towel, put it in the trunk. They get to the home, he pulls it out. He goes in there. He agrees. I mean, he tells in great detail what he used, what
but
he looked like.
You're asking us to reweigh the evidence. That was implicitly rejected by the fact finder.
But I will point out that he was never impeached by his prior felonies or by any inconsistent statements. So the fact finder did say, between the two of you, who am I going to believe? Yes, but I still don't think that he ever explicitly said, I believe this to be a firearm under the statute.
Pretty important factor to put in context where the statement was made and how it was used. I mean, when you say I'm going to shoot you, and the context is a violent, in effect, break-in robbery, doesn't the context start allowing you to consider whether people take BB guns normally to that type of confrontation, and when they say, I'm going to shoot you in a situation where it's a violent and a breaking, robbery, this type thing, that they normally mean that I'm going to shoot you, I'm going to do something that's going to do the job on you, and it's not going to be plunking you with a BB.
And I think that's an
or a water pistol. I mean, your argument would be you take a water pistol to an armed robbery.
Right, and I think that...
And doesn't that color how you interpret what these words were and whether they have the innocuous meaning that they could have?
And I think that can definitely go to the use of a firearm in commission of felony, but we have a very distinct definition of what the use of a firearm is, or I'm sorry, what a possession of a firearm to being convicted of felony.
Well, and in deciding whether this thing that looks like, I mean, we've got it well identified as a M16, M4, I'm familiar with one of those, but anyway, that's a military assault weapon. Pretty well identifies it as a lethal form of weapon. Then I'll give you context as to whether they're dealing with a paintball gun or they're dealing, and frankly, whether to believe this guy when he says he's bringing a BB gun or not. And when you can get into whether anybody saw an orange tip to it.
Sure. I would argue that we can look at that picture that was, again, deemed quite unhelpful from the by the trial court that was introduced by the Commonwealth. But then we can look at defense exhibit number one that was also introduced, which was, as Mr. Trotter admitted, that's my BB gun. And they are very similar looking. And Mr. Hampton says, I took in a black gun that didn't have a clip and it had an orange tip on the bottom. They look very similar. But I don't think that we can still make that leap that this is within that definition of 308.2. I just don't think that the evidence there, I think that when you go into a robbery, you are definitely coming in with an aggressive tone. So the threat to shoot is going to go along with that. But I still don't think that it goes to the red threat to kill. I still don't
so
think
if
that.
So if a defendant, if the evidence, hypothetically, if the evidence in a particular case were that a witness testified, the defendant says, I've got a gun, and pulls out what appears to be a gun, and says nothing more, that that's insufficient to establish that it is, in fact, a gun?
If the witness is unable to identify anything more than it's a big black gun, I would say that's insufficient. I'd like to move to my second point about the deadly weapon obviously the Commonwealth met their burden on a statutory burglary, but as you know, the deadly weapon part is what enhances the penalty. In this case, the trial court didn't ever make a factual finding at the close of evidence about that being a per se deadly weapon. They never said, I specifically believe this is something that intends to expel a projectile by means of explosion. I think that ultimately the fact finder found it, the initial motion to strike, with all the due inferences to the Commonwealth that this is, you know, what that could be. But ultimately, he didn't explicitly reiterate its previous findings. They didn't say that what
does was... Does he need to? I mean, when you render a verdict, doesn't that implicitly... isn't that an implicit conclusion that you find that the evidence supports the elements of the offense?
Well, again, the court was relying on in their argument several times the threat to kill. They keep mentioning this threat to kill, which is nowhere supported in the evidence. It's mentioned at the initial motion to strike. It's mentioned again at the end. He keeps saying, Mr. Hampton threatened to kill Ms. Morrison. There was never any testimony of that from Ms. Morrison, from Mr. Trotter, and certainly not from Mr. Hampton. At the close of the case, Hampton testified he used a BB gun. And yes, his description was contrary to that of the victims, but still...
But the fact finder expressly rejected your client's credibility. I mean,
and we
implicitly, expressly.
And we understand that there's deference due to that. He was the person who tried the case. The court was the one...
Such as much deference. We're bound by it. I mean, even if I might come to a different conclusion, it wouldn't matter.
But you could also note the fact that he was never impeached by prior convictions or prior inconsistent statements. I'll move to our admittedly weakest point, which is the use of firearm commission of robbery. Ultimately, we concede that courts have found that BB guns have been sufficient to convict under this statute. But under that Holloman analysis, the object has to give the appearance of having the capability of expelling a projectile by means of an explosion. Again, I understand the court's saying that the trial court explicitly rejected our client's testimony, but the testimony was he had a BB gun with an orange tip, and that simply does not give the appearance of being able to expel a projectile by means of an explosion. I think I'm about to hit my reserve time, so I won't.
All right, thank you very much. Mr. Whitman.
Good morning, Judge Huff, and may it please the court. Stephen Whitman on behalf of the Commonwealth today. This case, like most sufficiency challenges, is all about the standard of review. And under the standard review that's applicable in this case, once the defendant testified that it wasn't a gun, and his testimony was rejected by the fact finder below, this case, for purposes of appeal, was over. The rejection of that testimony, trial judge was compelled to consider that.
Well, that presupposes, of course, there was evidence that it was a gun. So.
But the trial judge is also entitled to consider false testimony as affirmative evidence of guilt. The defendant's testimony, under the facts of this case, actually made the Commonwealth's case stronger. The introduction of Defense Exhibit 1, the BB gun that Trotter testified was not the weapon used in the robbery, actually made the Commonwealth's evidence stronger. We would ask the court to affirm.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Not a lot there to read by.
And my point is we need to hold the Commonwealth to their burden. I don't think that the evidence that was presented was sufficient for 308.3, was sufficient for the deadly weapon, nor was it sufficient for the use of the firearm in 53.1. I think that what we have was a failure to identify the type of weapon. We had almost useless testimony about pictures of what could have been. And we didn't have a threat to kill.
How do you answer the argument that the AG did make? In other words, the defendant says it's not a gun. The only two possibilities can be it's a gun or it's not a gun. Those are only two options. Having said it's not a gun and that not being believed, why isn't that proof that it was a gun?
There are still still things that need to be proven.
Why isn't that a proper argument to make in the standard of review when it's presumed that the Commonwealth evidence is, but then the defendant gets up and in the finding lies to the effect that it wasn't a gun, which would be proof that it was a gun. Why wouldn't that establish the case on appeal?
Well, I think it, as a defense attorney, it's really hard when we feel that everything the defendant says is a lie. There are many
things. That was the finding, and we're dealing with standard of review.
And there are many things that were corroborated by his testimony. And I understand that the trial court found that he was expressly, you know, not credible in comparison to this other person. But I think instead what the court needs to do is, fine, disregard the testimony of the defendant if you must. But that still does not show that what we knew about the facts during this case, what we knew, what the victim was able to provide, what the officer's testimony about could have been, maybe might have been, it's not enough. And the Commonwealth needs to be held to their burden to prove that this was a firearm that was able to expel projectile by means of explosion. At this point, I would ask for the reasons stated in brief and also in oral argument of the defendant. Respectfully, we request reversal on all three convictions before the court, and I thank you all for your time.
Very well, thank you very much. We'll come down and greet counsel and thereafter take up the case of Bray versus the Commonwealth.
Good morning, Judge Humphreys.
Judge Hush.
Good morning.
Judge Bumgarner, good to see you.
Thank you.